now for another episode of Ruining It for Everyone with your hosts Maggie McPhee and Christopher Harrington. Episode 2, Liquid Television. So what happened last week?
Well, I think I mostly got my MakerBot fixed, but now it's got a totally different issue, so, you know. But I think it's pretty much back to working.
Well, that's cool. Was the problem the thermocoupler, as you suspected?
Yeah. Okay. I worked on Tiny Walking Eye a little bit, too. I got been doing a lot of work on its arm, and I got a new chassis for it from Daegu. So that's pretty awesome. So my robot's coming along.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah. You'll have to post pictures to the into the show notes.
Yeah, I can put some pictures of the chassis and the new arm up.
As far as I'm concerned, I can't remember what I did last week.
Yeah, I think we've established that you had a lobotomy.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird. I cannot remember what on earth I did last week.
You worked on the show.
Well, I worked on the show, yeah. We gave birth to a show. We are now on iTunes as well, which is really lovely. So please download and rate and give us a review. That would be really fun. We'll bug you about it at the end of the show. So, yeah, so it's all there. So you can catch us at ruiningitforeveryone.tv. And if that's too long, it's ruiningit.com. So what shows do you like?
Oh, well, you and I have kind of talked about different stuff we like, but I mean, like right now I'm really into The Walking Dead and Boardwalk Empire. Those are like my two big shows that are on right now, but, you know, and it's seasonal, so there's that, and then Doctor Who when it's on, and Venture Brothers when it's on, which we're both huge fans of.
Oh, indeed. I love Venture Brothers. As a matter of fact, Astrobase Go, the folks who do the Venture Brothers, their office is only a couple of blocks from me in Manhattan. So I will occasionally, during the warmer months, I will wear the Venture Brothers t-shirts in and around the area in hopes that someone will recognize them. So
you should totally do a secret mission.
I know what they, you know, they have very distinctive features. I know what they look like. I can right. I can spy them, you know, fairly easily. You know, Doc Hammer weighs, you know, 5 pounds 6 ounces, and you know, long platinum blonde hair. You know, he's really really difficult to miss in a crowd,
right.
Unless you see him at the wrong angle, in which case he completely disappears. Yeah, no, I'm really, really looking forward to the new Venture Brothers, but that is going to be sometime in mid-2012. I think April is when they're looking at that.
Yeah, it's a long time.
It's a really long time, but, you know, it's basically just the two of them with some other folks doing some of the voices and such. So they're always, you know, they're working super crazy hard trying to do every episode.
Yeah, I know.
And the cycle is just... I think it gets too much for them. They used to post to LiveJournal fairly frequently, and not so much these days, but you know, it was nice to follow what was going on with the team and see what they were doing and everything. It was very, very cool. But yeah, I'm pretty into Walking Dead. I like Walking Dead a lot. This season, what do you think about this season?
Of Walking
they've
Dead?
Of Walking Dead. I mean, because they changed it quite a bit. They've lost... A huge swath of their funding, so they're working on a much smaller budget. But also, it seems that the storyline is a little bit different.
Well, I was thinking about this the other night when I was watching the episode, and I, you know, sometimes I look on Twitter to see what people are saying, but I enjoy the slow burn, and if it's done well. I mean, slow burn can be completely boring, which that show Terra Nova is just slow burn and no payoff. But I like the slow burn. I like, you know, getting a little bit more of the characters. I'm happy with it. I'm still enjoying it. And every once in a while, they smack you in the face. And, you know, I'm really happy with it. I tune in diligently.
I really enjoyed the first season. I thought it was really great. I thought these, from what I've seen of the second season, and unfortunately, because of the way the second season is going, I haven't been, partially due to my own things I have to do, I'm just not in front of the television, and I'm I think the last geek on the planet to not own a TiVo. so I actually have to watch it when it airs or find it by nefarious means. And I have to say, the second season, I know they are, you know, working with a much smaller budget. And so what I think they're doing with that smaller budget is very, very good. But there are a few things that are starting to bother me about the show. You know, the whole idea where, you know, they're not certain what will trigger the, you know, the zombies to come after them. It just doesn't, it's not making sense. You know, they can stand still and they won't be bothered, or they can be, you know, they can make a whole bunch of noise. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't seem to be internally consistent, and that's what I have a problem with.
Huh. I haven't considered that, and I don't know. I haven't seen that as, that didn't stand out to me, really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to come up with some individual cases, but yeah, it just seemed that sort of thing just started bothering me over time. So I haven't been watching it consistently. And while I suppose, you know, going back, I should consider all the episodes in order and all that sort of thing. I'm not quite ready to give up on it, but I'm not tuning in all the time either.
Well, yeah, I'm still thoroughly hooked, and I mean, I think there are some things, I think the thing with what's her name? Carol's daughter. You know, they've been looking for.
Oh, right, and that's the main story arc for the season. Is that
right?
The
they've been looking for Sophia for days, right. And at this point, I think that anyone else would have given up, and it seems to be. But I mean, you know, it also allows them to, you know, they're dragging the stories. You know, they're at the farmhouse, so it's not like they have to leave or they have to move on or anything. But, and that's going to start to boil up, I think, too, especially after last episode.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Big. Well, we probably don't want to spoil it, but.
And there was a couple little surprises in it too. I mean, they did some flashbacks, and then they did I don't want to spoil it, but there was a thing with Daryl. Then
that's actually one of the, so I remembered one of the things I really didn't like. It was either the first or the second episode in the new season. Way where they are on a highway of some sort.
I was wondering if that's what you're talking about, and they have to crawl under the cars.
They've got to crawl under the cars and all of that. But, you know, you're in a gigantic Winnebago. You're on a highway. There's nothing except overturned cars and wrecked cars for miles around. All of a sudden, there's a gigantic horde of 50-odd zombies that you didn't see coming. How does that even happen? That just blew my mind. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm out of the suspension of disbelief. This is, your argument is invalid. I was done.
I thought that was a factor of it's a zombie show.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just it. They've done a really, really good job up until now of being internally consistent and being believable with. Obviously, suspension of disbelief. I mean, we're talking about zombies. Zombies don't actually exist. For you kids at home, zombies don't actually exist. Vampires exist, but they're not sparkly. The other thing I was going to say is that it's a big story arc, right? So it's difficult to come back in after missing a few episodes because you really don't know what's going on. You know, big chunks of plot have been are missing.
You're not even at the farmhouse yet, then?
No. I don't believe I am. So all that is lost on me. Hmm. But that's one of the things that I've found to be true in a lot of the shows that I like is that they tend to have very long story arcs,
yeah.
Which makes it difficult to say, oh, you know, you've got to check out this show, because if I say, you know, check out Sons of Anarchy, for example, which I really think is fantastic. It's hyper-violent, but it's incredibly well-acted. Katie Sagal, it can do no wrong. I think she just does a fantastic job. I love her. And then it stars, keep forgetting his name. Of course, now I'm going to look it up. The fellow from Beauty and the Beast. And the
Ron
problem
Perlman.
Is that, yes, Ron Perlman.
The man.
And, yes.
I love Ron Perlman.
My problem is that I cannot dissociate him from the Beast character.
Really?
From
he's
Beauty
Hellboy
and the Beast.
To me, so.
Yeah, but even then I saw him as the Beast.
Oh.
Yeah, I could not. It's
How
something
old
about
are you?
His face. I'm 40.
You're not that old.
I'm 40.
So? I mean, that's.
Yeah, that's frightening. Yeah, no, I very
you
much
weren't supposed
that.
To actually say how old you were. Now you've blown it.
Oh,
the whole
oh, well.
World knows.
No, the secret's out. Yeah, the
I'm
secret's
not saying
out.
How old I am.
That's okay. I'm actually lying.
Right.
I am.
I think you're 34, weren't you?
I'm 26. There we are.
Let's not push it.
Damn it. Yeah, no. Actually, it would be rather pathetic if I were 26 and this bald. Yeah, that'd be deeply, deeply unfortunate.
I don't know. I have a cousin who he went bald like in high school.
So. Well, it's testosterone. You know, all the testosterone, it gets rid of the hair on the dome. Puts it everywhere else. But, you know, what you're going to do.
TMI.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'd love to say, you know, definitely check out Sons of Anarchy. But, you know, even if you start with the beginning of this season, there's so much that went on in the prior seasons that you're going to be totally lost. It's an entire series arc. And that just makes it so difficult. But I do highly suggest going on Netflix. I believe the first couple of seasons are, the first three seasons, I believe, are available on streaming. So you can check those out.
Yeah.
It's an hour-long show, so it's, 42 minutes streamed. Just the acting is so well done. It's very plausible. Although toward the end of the first season, it does kind of go into low Earth orbit, and then the current season is bringing it back down. Very, very bad things are happening in this season, and it's really quite remarkable. Characters that you've loved for a while, you know, they bad things happen. Just oh. Not fun, not fun. But the character, yeah, I know, I'm trying not to spoil anything, but trying to get you interested as well, and I'm not doing
well,
a very good job.
It's definitely a show I want to watch, because, I mean, when I first saw the previews for it, I'm like, oh, that was really good. But I didn't start watching it, and for the same reasons that you're saying, I knew that it was probably a show with, if not long arcs, at least some, you know, arc to it because of the subject matter. So, but it's definitely on my list of, you know, catch up and start watching, or watch as a box set like I'm doing with Deadwood. So,
oh, Deadwood was fantastic. Oh my goodness.
I've had people tell me they're envious. Oh, you're watching Deadwood for the first time. Oh, I'm envious.
Nice.
I was going to say another show you were talking about was Game of Thrones.
Yes,
which I also
another HBO show. Yeah, Game of Thrones is fantastic. It's basically a mini series on HBO based upon the book. Just absolutely fantastic. I had not actually heard of the book. The company that I work for, HBO is a client of ours, and we were actually doing the Game of Thrones viewer's guide, and we'll put the URL in the show notes because it's still up and available. and it was a lot of fun. So of course I read the brief and then had to read all sorts of other source material to really understand what was going on with it. And I was just utterly captivated. The books themselves are very, very dense.
Right.
You've got bajillions of characters, bajillions of tiny little subplots, all interconnected. The show does the miniseries, I suppose, does a fantastic job of cutting out a lot of the stuff that just simply isn't filmic, you know, and keeps the plot flowing, which is really, really cool. I was very, very impressed, and the acting is wonderful. Sean Bean is in it, and who doesn't love Sean Bean? Ironically, he plays the same character as he played in Lord of the Rings.
Peter Dinklage is in it. I love me some Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, the entire series is so well done. If you like political intrigue, if you like a bit of sword and sorcery, sword and board type of stuff.
Right, it's George really R. R. Martin. So
right, exactly. No relation to J.R. Tolkien, but there are certainly some borrowed themes. It's actually pretty light on the sorcery portion of the program. Mm-hmm. It is definitely fantasy fiction, but it's more rooted in reality than say like a D&D like thing,
right.
Where there's mages who are casting lightning bolts and magic missile and into the darkness and all that sort of thing.
Right, more medieval drama than Harry Potter.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we've got plagues, we've got houses fighting houses marrying into other houses to form alliances, all the stuff that actually happened in our Earth. Politically and all of that, and it centers on a bunch of different houses and goes through each one of their major story arcs. And of course, the book series is still going. As a matter of fact, just recently they came out with a new book, and so the series is going to follow along with the book. So this upcoming season is going to be the second book, and I'm really looking forward to that. Cool. That should be ramping up.
Well, I'm thinking of catching up and then starting watching the new season.
Yeah, if you've got HBO Go, definitely check it out.
Which is awesome, by the way.
Yeah, speaking of envy, I'm very envious of that. We in Connecticut, we've got Cablevision, which we get HBO, but apparently they don't have the HBO doesn't have the contract with Cablevision to allow HBO Go to exist for Cablevision customers, which kind of tells you how broken this whole rights management thing is.
Right.
It's like, if you pay for HBO, why don't you just give me the content?
Yeah. And we were going to talk about TV, and I think we should come back to that too, because I think there's a bit more of that to suss out.
Yeah, I think part of that is the whole cutting the cord concept. Why do I need a cable provider to provide anything but a giant pipeline to the internet?
Well, I was going to mention Boardwalk Empire again before we got to that, but
sure.
I think it's one of those things that if you can get a chance, it's just really great drama. There's nothing. I mean, it takes place in Atlantic City when Atlantic City was, coming into its own, when it was, first becoming a tourist destination, and it was very corrupt. And Steve Buscemi is the lead in this, and it's really well written. It's beautifully shot, and all that. The cast is just phenomenal. So it's a complete obsession to me. And Marty Scorsese, of course, is involved. So it's, it's going to be good.
Oh, my goodness. That's incredible. I didn't realize Scorsese was involved. That's very, very cool. Yeah, I saw the costuming and all of that. And I was, quite blown away by it. It was very, very intriguing. But ironically, I don't actually have HBO, so I can't watch it.
Well, anyone out there who's into just, really well-written drama, check it out. It's definitely, but HBO, going back to that, is one of the reasons I haven't cut the cord, because I really, really considered it. I do have a TiVo, and that kind of keeps me in there, but HBO and now HBO Go is just so good that it's kind of keeping me there.
I'd consider, the HBO Go concept is phenomenal. It is all the HBO content. For those that don't know, HBO Go is an app for iOS. It's out for the iPad. Is it also out for the iPhone? I can't recall.
I'm not certain.
Okay. Well, go onto the iTunes store and you'll see it. Look up HBO Go. We'll put it in the show notes. It's an iPad app. It allows you, if you get HBO on cable, it allows you to see any HBO program at any time streaming onto your iPad, which is just phenomenal. Old series, new series, regardless, it's there.
And the app is really nice and really well done.
Yeah, it's responsive. Yeah, the app is really responsive. It responds to clicks and it responds to streaming faults very quickly and recovers properly. It's so well done. Right. The folks that did it did a really fantastic job.
Like you said, one of the pitfalls, though, is if your cable provider hasn't set this up with HBO, because you sign in using your, whatever, like I have Comcast, so I sign in with my Comcast email address and password. But if your provider has worked this out with HBO, then it's just free to you if you have HBO, of course. And then there's also a Cinemax Go now.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so they're expanding very quickly. Well, right. that's going to be the future of, I mean, for me, that seems to be the future of where television is headed, where give me an app where I have full carte blanche of anything I want, and I will pay a certain amount of money per month in order to have access to that.
Yes.
So, say for sake of argument, my cable bill, which is basic cable, but it's the high definition package, so all the channels come in on HD. But it's nothing fancy, no HBO, no Cinemax, no movie channels. We don't even get National Geographic. We don't even get BBC America or anything like that.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. It's a whole thing. but also, I'm just not... I just don't watch a lot of television, so it's not worth it. But that said, it's still over $60 a month.
Oh, dude, that's...
yeah.
No. I was just going, that's nothing.
but that's what I'm saying. I'm getting a very basic package, and I'm still paying $60 a month.
Right, you're still paying what you would probably... in a perfect world, what you would probably expect to pay for... all the cable minus pay channels and stuff.
Right, exactly, yeah. and that's what I'm interested in doing because I only watch a small handful of shows. Give me season passes to those shows, and I will pay X dollars a month. Where my budget is, I guess, around $60, $60-$70. I'll just get what I'm looking for, and screw the rest. It's very carte blanche, but. Something like an HBO Go or a Cinemax Go, that it's all under one roof, which is fantastic because HBO's got really good quality programming, and right. I'd much rather pay them the $10 a month directly than my cable provider.
Absolutely, there's so much you pay for so much that you don't want or need, and I think that really, like you said, that is the future. I mean, if you look at not necessarily the Apple TV, but something like Roku, the way it's set up in a way. Well, and maybe Apple TV one day, but that whole idea of the app channel, and I'm certain that's the way the future's going, but it's just like with the movie industry and the record industry, well, it's, the cable industry is going to be facing their Waterloo at some point over that.
And what I don't understand is why do the cable providers feel that they must provide, quote, added value? I don't understand why. I mean, granted, again, we're nerds. We think about these things. We're going to consider alternate options, whereas, someone, my next door neighbor may not. Consider that. They just want a normal television. They want to be able to change channels whenever they want. But why does a cable provider believe that they're actually providing value by bundling up a whole bunch of channels that no one really wants and they've got to take because they're contractually obligated to take them? And then not provide things like DVRs for free or it just... I don't know. It It doesn't make any sense. And why not just be a pipe?
Well,
who cares? You're still getting money.
It is pure marketing, though. It's like, so there are certain channels they have to pay for. And so, you know, that eats into their bottom line. But they're trying to sell to the public as, look at all these channels. Look at all this stuff, you know. So, I mean, adding 20, you know, complete crap channels or 20, you know, versions of a channel you get on a, you know, a duplicate channels or whatever. It's all about, you know, it's all about appearances for the average TV consumer, because still, you know, we're still facing being the edge cases. There, you know, most people still watch TV, and most people still watch TV through cable. So,
but the other problem, though, is that cable is for the most part a monopoly. You may have, you know, show access via satellite or something, or possibly antenna, but your cable company, the cable coming into your home, is probably a monopoly.
It's ridiculous.
Very, very few places actually have your choice of cable provider. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I don't have an option of any other, aside from satellite, any other cable provider. It's Cablevision or nothing.
Right. And same so, here. I have Comcast or nothing.
Yeah. So,
but right across, you know, just like a couple miles away, there's a different area where you can have Comcast or you can have RCN, and there's competition. And guess what? Is it cheaper? Of course it is.
Right.
Because there's competition.
Yeah.
I don't understand how this continues. Because these same providers, when they start providing internet, were forced to allow, you know, other ISPs to share their, you know, to share their copper. But why doesn't that apply for cable television as well?
Yeah, I don't. Maybe there are, you know, laws or something. I really don't know.
Well, it's negotiated, I think, usually by
contract.
With the city or the district or whatever.
Right. Yeah. So you provide the infrastructure, and we'll allow you a temporary monopoly, which turns out into be a permanent monopoly.
A permanent monopoly. Yes.
Yeah, because no one else wants to lay the fiber. But
and Dish TV is their Apple to their Microsoft, basically. They need it to be alive so that they can claim to have competition, but they could crush it at any day.
But it's fake, right? Because they really don't compete.
That's what I mean, it's just like, oh, but no, there's competition. Look, see right here? And it's like, well, okay.
So if you're not going to do cable, or rather if you're going to do cable, but you want certain alternative methods, what are some of the options out there? I mean, there's the whole home theater PC concept and all that.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can both speak to that. I think we've both been down that road. You may be still on that road, right?
I am, actually. I'm really thrilled with my toy. a while back, I did a bunch of research, and the story, the history of it is on my personal blog at localtype.org. We'll put the link in the show notes, where I go through the different home theater applications, the different hardware, and finally settle on Plex, which is, I think, it was first out for the Mac, which was nice. It had a little bit better interface, but it was based on the XBMC, or the Xbox Media Center,
right,
which was a fantastic little app that you could put on your original Xbox if you rooted your Xbox. There were a lot of people who were doing that and using that as sort of a home theater set-top box type of thing, where they could play their own content rather than or streaming from the internet.
Unless you live in Australia, then rooting your Xbox is a totally different thing.
Oh, yes. No, that's entirely, entirely different. Oh, dear. Yes. Yeah, you'll never live that down.
So you're still running Plex now, then?
Yeah, I'm still running it. As a matter of fact, a couple of weeks back, they came out with an update for it, and the update was quite lovely. I thought the experience that I had with Plex, once I got it configured and once I got all of my media happening, I wound up putting that on a NAS drive and buying one of the new Mac Minis, the one with the HDMI out on it.
Right.
and plug that directly into my television. And I went with that route, even though it's vastly more expensive. I went with that route because it allows me to run macOS, not a its own little mini operating system, which meant that I have access to Safari and I have access to, therefore a real browser and any other Mac application I want to run on a television, which gives me options, right? So that's mm-hmm. really cool. I can run things in QuickTime 7 and theoretically I can run something in QuickTime X. I haven't actually been able to do that successfully. That's a different story. That's a different show. We'll get into that. We'll get into that later. And so when I want to watch Flash based content, for example, any of the Flash streaming, sites that are out there, Twit TV, for example, does a live stream, high bandwidth stream, that is Flash based and, you just pop it in a browser and it looks gorgeous. Full screen mode, it's on your television, it's great. It also allows you to watch Hulu without any restrictions. Normally, Hulu hates it when you connect your television to it. For example, even though it's on Roku, it doesn't really like it when it's plugged into the television, so it's really weird. Hulu is just... Totally
that's when
bonkers.
You should buy the completely useless Hulu Plus.
Right, exactly. And that's not going to happen.
Give us more money for fewer options.
Yeah. The value isn't there. I'm not abstemious. I will spend money. I'm not parsimonious. Absolutely. I'll certainly spend money where I think that there's value. But I'm not going to spend money where there is decidedly no value.
Yeah, I did it for Hulu Plus for a while, and then finally I just closed it, and I wrote him, and I said, this is ridiculous. I'm paying you for less content than I can get in the regular Hulu player, and, you're not giving me anything really that's worth it. It's just as hard to find stuff and whatnot. And yeah, it was just totally not worth it. It was a great idea, but it's clear that the Hulu and the Hulu Plus, which I understand are separate parts or separate groups, were just fighting with each other. So
really, I sort of figured it was just this is a premium service and here you go. No adverts or additional content.
Yeah, the story I got was that the Hulu Plus was a new, someone had this idea and they were allowed to run with it, but it was, separate. Much like, it was like the Apple II and Mac teams, So they were fighting against each other, basically.
So it was the rebel unit inside Hulu.
Yeah. So that just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. It also seems weird to me that it's like, well, it's kind of an obvious thing. Let's see. You had a poorly ad-supported model for regular free streaming television.
But that was very, very much watched. A lot of people used it.
Oh, yeah. The first few months it was out, like the second I heard about it, I was on it all the time.
Right.
The selection was fairly good. It had real television shows rather than, random crap that you've never heard of.
Or like an excerpt. Here's 10 minutes of Family Guy. Like, no.
Yeah. But yeah. That's what a lot of the networks were doing on their web pages, where you'd see here's 20 seconds of a show, here's 90 seconds of this show, here's half a joke of this show. And it sucked. The experience was awful. It was usually some, big, giant, honking plugin that, would have pre-roll, mid-roll, and end-roll, post-roll. Often the ads would show, except that it wouldn't go to the actual content. So you'd watch a 30-second advert for a 15-second clip that would never show up. It was ridiculous. It was totally ridiculous.
And then they took it and made it worse.
Yeah. Except Hulu solved that, which was great, and at first they didn't have a lot of adverts, and then you wound up seeing the same advert 37 times in a row, I didn't even, that didn't even bother me too much. If you ran certain ad blockers, you would actually not even see the advert, which was fantastic. And then there was a bit of a cat and mouse game through that as well, where they learned about that, and so they fixed it. They streamed it a different way, and then the ad blocker people figured out how to still block that ad. And it was, you know, I think eventually Hulu won that that round. Or alternatively, Hulu lost because they lost viewership.
Right.
Yeah. But I can't imagine that thinking about a subscription service was at all novel. I mean, that seems like a logical thing to do.
A logical next step.
Exactly. You know, rather than splitting off into like a rebel smaller unit that comes up with this new, interesting, fantastic idea all on their own. I'm like, really?
Right, exactly. They had something going, and there were things that people did want in addition. And like, you know, they wonder if you were, if you'd be able to, you know, watch stuff with fewer ads. But they were like, well, can I also watch, you know, there were like certain shows, or can I watch a show like, you know, the night of or whatever. It was a no-brainer from most people's point of view as to how to do this. And then Hulu just did not do that. They did something completely different.
Yeah, it was, and what they did was fully and wholly rejected by their audience, and they didn't care. Very similar to what just recently went down with Netflix, where it's like, oh, we're going to break up the company into two different bits, and we're going to keep streaming, and we're going to jettison the plastic disc thing. Oh, did we say we're going to jettison it? No, we're actually going to separate it out into a different company. Oh, never mind. We won't do that at all.
Right, but they listened.
At least they listened. Yeah. They had the ability to sort of say, oh, okay, this is really what our audience is looking for, and we won't do that. The problem, though, is that their messaging was really poorly handled, I thought.
And they admitted that. I mean, to their credit, they came and said, you know, we handle that really bad. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I still pay for them. Mostly because I keep forgetting to mail back my disc. I have one.
I'm with you, brother. I've had one
disc for over 2 years. It's pathetic. I think, and the worst part about it is, I think it's the very first disc I got.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's really pretty. Weird. That's pretty sad. No, yeah, she uses it a lot, but I've got where I just stream from it, and I have this one disc, and I don't remember what it is, and I've had for probably 6 months.
Well, part of it is that their streaming is not high definition by any stretch of the imagination. There's a secret Vulkan keyboard command that you can invoke that will allow you to set. Rather than have the stream be dynamic, which it is normally, so if you have a hiccup in your net connection, it will actually drop the quality of the video so that your motion remains smooth. The problem, of course, is that when you drop from one tier to the next tier, it becomes very, very obvious, and what is barely watchable becomes entirely unwatchable. So you invoke this little key command, and you can actually set the target bitrate, and it will always use that stream, which is fantastic. See,
now this is where you and I diverge.
Oh.
So you're using Plex and the computer. It's like, I don't watch Netflix on a computer anymore. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, I do have a TiVo, and it has Netflix on there. I don't usually use it to watch Netflix because my Apple TV does Netflix really well, and it looks great. And also,
I like the Apple TV. I think the Apple TV 2 is a really cool device. You know, it's tiny. Yeah. It, you know, doesn't have any fans, which is really lovely. The the Mini does have a fan, but you can barely hear it. It's almost never on. Which I like. But yeah, it's tiny. The interface is fine. What I don't like about it, though, is the remote. I don't like. There are two things I don't like about it.
There's a remote?
Yes, there's a remote for the Apple TV.
Yeah, it's called an iPhone.
But it's not a good one. It's really not a good one. Because the problem, though, is that the iPhone remote doesn't really do anything better than the handheld remote. Mm. You know, it still has to go through the down, down, down to select type of thing, doesn't it? I mean, last time I saw it, that's exactly what happened.
It doesn't bother me, honestly. And I'm surprised to hear that given that you use Plex, which also uses, if I, well, I haven't used it in a while, so maybe it doesn't. Doesn't it also use the menu, submenu, submenu?
Oh, no. Well, okay. So there are multiple versions of the, quote, remote control. So Plex will run on a Mac. It'll actually run on the Apple TV 2 as well. But obviously it's subject to some limitations. And it's a full screen interface. It's a, you know, 10-foot interface. So everything is really big. And you can use your keyboard to navigate, but you can also use a remote control. But they also have an iOS app. And that iOS app isn't merely a remote control. It actually shows you all of your media. And so you can scroll through your media just like you're scrolling through iTunes
right.
You know, your Kindle software.
The TiVo app does that as well.
Right, exactly. And so you just point to what you want. You know, you can get information. You can, and what you're doing is you're basically queuing up what you want on the television. The neat part about it is you can also stream directly to the iPad as well.
Yeah, that was kind of cool, and I just read today that that Plex has got they have a Google TV plugin.
Oh, brilliant!
Yeah. So they're going everywhere.
People, yeah, the five people who have Google TV will be able to use Plex.
Well, so it's available for your home theater PC. It's available for Google TV. It's available on iOS because the iOS client, if I'm not mistaken, actually, you know, plays media apart mm-hmm. from the box. You don't have to have the box on, right?
Okay, so the Plex is actually the newest version of Plex. It's gone through several iterations, and you can still play with the earlier versions because the newer versions are very divergent. The newer versions use a client-server architecture. So you have to have a server component somewhere. But if you have your server component somewhere, and it knows where your media is located, it can stream it directly to you, no problem.
But it can stream, and we can do channels, or is that not true?
Okay, so channels are a little bit like plugins. So third parties will create a channel or a plugin, using Python. Okay. Which is cool, you know. So if you know Python, it's pretty straightforward to get started. I haven't made my own plugin yet, but I have tweaked existing plugins because what the plugin is it really winds, or very often it winds up screen scraping a web page,
right?
Looking for a stream file, or looking, or potentially just grabbing the whatever URL is the main media unit for that page, and putting it into the Plex interface.
Right.
So, for example, there's a Twit plugin, so you can get all of your you can actually stream live. But that said, the quality of the Plex stream is not as good as going to the web page and streaming it directly. Which is why I'm very glad I have the Mini, because I can just go into Safari and click on, go to the URL, click on it, click on the full screen, and then bam, there I go in a good high-definition version.
That's why I dumped HTPCs, basically. It was just, I ended up doing too much fiddling. You know, I had a Mini running, as well. I ran, tried XBMC. I think I tried early Plex and Boxy, and I always ended up so much fiddling and, how about if I get this Bluetooth keyboard / mouse thing? Well, maybe that will do it. Nah, that doesn't help. I'll have to go to Safari. And I even tried a Windows Media Center PC, and it was just like, this is great. Oh, look, more ads. Thanks. I've seen the same ad every time I start a new, and it's just like, I just got tired of that. Because I have all my media on a NAS. Actually, I have a home server, and then it's all backed up to a NAS, but So, I mean, that's why I've like settled on, well, there's Elephant in the Room, which I'll get to in a second, but that's kind of why I've settled on, you know, Apple TV streams my iTunes library. It does these other things like Netflix, which my TV does too, but that's a whole different story. And then my TiVo, well, the elephant in the room, though, is Roku. Roku does all the stuff we're talking about. Like, it has a Twitch channel, but it's not like, you know, it's not a, it's a real channel. It's not a scraped in, you know.
Oh, very nice.
You know, and it has Hulu and it has Netflix and it, you know. So, it, honestly, I finally broke down and got one of the new Rokus for my bedroom. And it's really great. I mean, quite honestly, it gets most everything right.
Very cool. Yeah, I was looking at that as well, but I couldn't figure out if it would be able to deal with the content that I was going to feed it. I knew it would be able to deal with the channels that it came with, you know, like the Netflix channel and all that sort of thing. The idea is, you know, going and viewing Netflix content or wherever, you know, any of the channels that it has. But part of the problem with the H.264 codec is that a lot of these ASICs don't necessarily deal with the full gamut of the codec. So you can have different profiles and certain devices will only deal with certain profiles or certain subsets of certain profiles. So for example, you can't easily record a single, you can't easily compress a single file that is guaranteed to run on, well, it's not entirely true, but
it's easier than it used to be,
right? But you can't, yeah, I was gonna say, for example, you can't make one single file that will play easily on the original iPhone to the Apple TV.
Yeah, but then you're I don't know, I think nothing's gonna do it all.
Well, it can do it all, and that's why the Mac Mini exists, you know, because I can, and Plex is good enough that...
But what's, you know, the Mac Mini got to do with encoding for, you know, original iPhone is like...
Oh, well, what I'm saying is that the way I record, so when I'm ripping all of my DVDs and Blu-rays and all that sort of thing for my own personal use,
well, public service announcement. We all do that.
Exactly.
It's quite legal. Thank you very much.
Yes, it is. What I do is I encode it in a fairly high bit rate, you know, encoding style with some pretty fancy features that the some of the mobile devices can't read. And for the high definition stuff, that high definition stuff is in 1080p. And there's, for example, there's no iOS device that does 1080p yet.
Right.
And so why would I want to rip a Blu-ray and then down-res it and then watch it on my 1080p television? It just doesn't make sense.
For the same reason we watched, you know, the 720p Star Wars. It looks good. I mean, I rip everything basically tailored towards Apple TV because I know that will play on my iPad. It'll play on my Roku. It'll play on my iPhone 4. You know, I can, it'll down-res fine if I wanted to do that, which I don't usually do that anyway, but, yeah, so I don't know. I get, it's really picking your battles, I guess.
I suppose, but that's also another thing I like about Plex, because the server component of Plex will actually, real-time re-encode for the device. So if I'm on the road and I've got my iPad with me and I want to watch, let's see, an episode of Square Pegs, because it happens to be out in front of me at the moment. Hey, it was a brilliant show. And Sarah Jessica Parker in braces, you know, who knew? So you want to watch something from your library, and you're on your iPad. Well, you know, if you encode it at a very, you know, at a pristine, you know, like new format, you know, you'll be able to down-res it no problem automatically. You know, it'll look a lot better than something that's already, you know, lightened the bitrate and lower resolution.
You're greedy, Christopher. Just greedy.
I am. Well, you know, I don't want to have to do it again and again and again. You know, I don't want to have to re-encode every year and a half. You know, because it gets tiring. You know, the shiny plastic discs, they bit rot after a while. You know, right. or they get scratched, or you lose them. And what I want to do is, I just want to make digital files, you know, hard drive files of everything, and back those up. And you know, when hard drive prices come down, you know, buy a larger NAS and keep it going forever. Why not?
Fair enough. I should mention that the Roku 2 will do, it does H.264 up to 12 megabits, so at 1080p. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's definitely a different animal than its predecessor.
Does it do B frames?
I don't know. Probably not. But I don't know for sure. Probably not.
That's the big thing. Or I encode with B frames, so. Anything that anything that doesn't read B frames is not happening.
You're reminding me a lot of Alex right now.
Alex, oh, well.
Everything in 1080p, 1080p,
1080p, 1080p.
Now he's all about.
Hey, I remember when they.
Good enough.
I remember when he was recording MacBreak in 1080p.
Oh God, it was crazy over that shit.
It was a 10 minute video segment at 1080p that was, you know, 500 megabytes to download.
Right.
I mean, really, don't get me wrong, I think it was fantastic because they were basically the only people doing it. But what on earth were they thinking when they were doing it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was Alex too, so it wasn't just 1080p, it was at least 422, if not original 444.
Yeah, they were, if I recall correctly, what they were doing is they took an HV20. Back then, it was, I believe they were using HV20s. They were taking the HDMI out directly rather than from the tape.
Right.
They were taking HDMI out directly into one of the Blackmagic cards that had HDMI in and recording directly to a hard drive.
Yeah. Oh, and then the earlier they did some stuff too. They were using, you know, various other cameras and they were recording all that stuff in 1080p. Now it's like, 720p is good enough.
Yeah, exactly. And they, if I recall correctly, they actually down-res it to like 540 or something.
Yeah, 540p, yeah, 960 by 540, which is actually really good.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. Yeah. It's a good compromise between, you know, file size and, because I think a 540 at a high bit rate is going to look, and up-resing it to like a 720 is going to look better than a 720 at the same bit rate. You know, it's by definition, right? Because you're using fewer bits to encode a larger resolution, or rather, you're using the same bits to encode a larger resolution.
Well, it's not a larger. Wait,
well, 720. Larger? You know, I'm saying they're using 540p, or they were using. Maybe it's different now, but they were using 540p at a fairly high bit rate. If you use the same bit rate to encode 720p, you obviously have fewer bits to describe a particular screen. Or frame, I should say.
Why? You have more pixels.
But you have fewer bits in which to describe those pixels. That's what I'm saying.
You said it the same bit rate?
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, yeah. Reduced bit rate, same, higher resolution. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So the 720p version may be 720p, but the visual quality is going to be worse than the 540. Or probably going to be worse than an up-resed 540 with a lot of information in those pixels.
But I mean, that's assuming that you're going to, you know.
Well, it assumes that your scaler is good.
And you're going to hold yourself to the same bit rates and so forth.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. You know, they clearly found, well, also some of what they do is, you know, the big video sites, Vimeo and YouTube, they have magic numbers. Those magic numbers are the bit rates that they conform all of the...
Right.
Or it's the max bit rate that they will accept. So if you go over that max bit rate, they will actually re-encode your file, which of course means further, you know, signal degradation because you've already encoded for output, right. and now it's going to re-encode for output. So all those lovely details are going to be completely muddied and completely lost. But the
magic sauce for doing that is out there. So all you have to do is do it right.
Oh yeah, it's known exactly. As a matter of fact,
the Turbo H264, and you know, I
does that work?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Talk to me about it. It's a little USB dongle
that basically has an H264 encoder built in, and then the software comes with all these profiles, including, you know, and I've got one set up for Vimeo, there's one set up for YouTube, there's one set up for Apple TV, or, you know, I've got one for like, all right, I need this size and I need really small, you know. In fact, I was doing all our videos at 540p for the streaming media side of work, but I've moved to 720p, and stick with me as to why. Because A, I have more space, I have more bandwidth, the machines that are playing it can play it just fine. And also, if they decide at some point, well, we want to put these on Blu-ray, you know, I can move that to Blu-ray. Now, I'm not doing 1080p because that's just ridiculous. But 540, I've got to go and do a re-encode or an upscale, and so I don't want to do that. But the Turbo 264 from Elgato, ding, plug, they're not paying it. It's great. I love it.
Very, very cool. Yeah, I wondered about the veracity of it. You know, obviously it would be a really big help if you've got a laptop. CPU and the disk, and it's mostly, I found that ripping stuff, I'm mostly disk bound, disk IO bound. So what winds up happening is, what I found the fastest encoding method to be is ripping to OneDrive and then encoding, rip all the disks that you're looking for, just do a copy to the hard drive, don't re-encode. And then step two is encode all that stuff in batch using
Handbrake.
So that's
exactly how I do it with the 264. So what I'll do is I'll go edit the video, and then I'll export a full-size QuickTime file, mm-hmm. And that will be my master. And then I just drop that QuickTime file into the Turbo 264 software, and I'll select, you know, the special sauce for our online, and I'll drop it in again and select iPhone and drop it in again and select Apple TV, you know, so, and then it just batch runs them, and it's really fast because it's all hardware encoding, so.
Very nice. Yeah, that's the, and when, prior to my current Mac Pro, I was on a G5 tower, which was incredibly slow at doing H.264 encoding. But now, with the hexa-core 333, it's really amazingly fast. I'm very impressed with the frame rate that I'm getting now.
Have you tried the Adobe Media Encoder?
I haven't, actually, which is weird.
I use it quite a bit. We also encode in Flash, and it does really excellent Flash. And it does some other things,
better,
too.
I mean...
yeah, I do, exactly.
I'll do it in... Well, it depends on what I'm encoding. My workflow is different between videos that I've created from scratch. You know, I've got the master tapes, as it were.
Right.
You know, stuff from the 5D... stuff from, you know, whatever video camera I may be using at the time. That workflow is entirely different from the workflow for re-encoding my own DVDs and Blu-rays.
Right. Well, again, yeah, I was going to say that that's true for me too. When, like, at home, you know, it's like if it's a Final Cut project, it's going to go to compressor. Or if it's a...
Really use compressor at all? I gave up on that much after version 1.
Well, it depends on what I'm doing. If I'm doing like DVDs, I'm going to use compressor because it's... Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of a one-stop, you know, one-click output, which is very nice. Yeah. But if I'm just outputting to some other output video format, I'm not trying to do a pre-master to DVD or to Blu-ray or what have you, I still use MPEG Stream Clip.
Yeah, it works very good.
Yeah, it works really, really well. What I have done in the past, because MPEG Stream Clip is, I believe, no longer supported. But it uses open source components. So what you can do is you can actually tweak the engines that it's using, and suddenly you've got an updated MPEG stream clip, which is fantastic, because its encoder is really, really fast and very, very good at using all of your available resources.
Right.
So
that's the hardest part. Yeah.
Exactly. The MPEG stream clip and Handbrake are the only things that can absolutely floor my hexacore. Everything else, even compressor. Compressor never seems to peg my CPU. It'll use all the cores, but it won't.
That's voodoo. It took me forever to get that house of cards built where I could saturate all the cores.
Man. Yeah, it was
and then
never,
you can't touch anything again.
Yeah. It never, you know, and it was never consistent. The same parameters going around a second time would have everything at roughly half speed.
Yeah,
same cores, but yeah. So, you know, if you can't get consistency out of it, you know, why bother? The quality of the compressor encoder isn't so bad. You know, it's acceptable for my purposes. I don't know if other people have problems with it, but MPEG Stream Clip is just fine. And if it's, you know, several times faster than compressor, why bother using anything else?
True.
So there. No problem. But Handbrake is fantastic because it is still supported and it will just breeze through a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, what I like about it, Handbrake for ripping DVDs and stuff.
Yeah, because I have a lot of foreign films, and so I like to keep the no, it's not code. Thank you very much. But it has. I like the subtitles, and so I can keep the subtitles the separate file, so they're not burnt into the video stream. So I can turn them on and off at will, which is very nice.
By the way, do you know that? Netflix and Apple TVs, the subtitles are working.
They're working now?
Yeah.
They weren't before. Is that recent?
I watched something with subtitles the other day, so I was like, wait a minute, what?
So, wow. Yeah. Because, yeah, that was a big bone of contention that the Apple TV 2, the Apple TV 2 and Netflix did not pass the subtitles. There's a setting to turn them on in Apple TV 2, and you do have to turn them on.
And it only works for the ones where it's been set up, so it's not everything. So.
Right, and I guess that's the problem as well. I've got several friends who are who have hearing loss or they're completely deaf, and one of them recently, actually a friend of mine, bought an Apple TV 2, and as it turns out, the selection of videos that are available with closed captioning is nearly none. Mm. And so we wound up returning it.
Yeah, that's really sad.
Yeah, it's quite unfortunate. Also, I watch television shows via Netflix streaming. I found that the films that I want to watch on Netflix streaming are not high enough quality for me. I get bothered by the macro blocks and I get bothered by the softness. But the television shows, I kind of don't care as much.
Is your Netflix experience really that bad?
Oh yeah, it's really bad. And that's even when I nail the high bit rate of, I think it's 3.7 or 3.2 megabit per second. It depends on the program material, actually. Some programs don't even have that high a bitrate. You can't choose it.
When you get the loading thing, do you ever get the HD?
Oh, yeah.
And it's still bad. I know what you mean about...
I'm also looking at it at a 46-inch television.
Well,
from about 5 feet away.
Inch, so. Oh, yeah. Well, 5 feet away, duh.
Yeah. So I guess I just see these things and you know, it's the same thing happens with cable television, you know.
Well, no, I was going to say, I see it, like, you know.
It doesn't bother you?
Yeah. No, I see cable, I see, like, you know, artifacting, and I see macro blocks on cable TV a lot. I just tend not to watch those channels. But I don't really see it. I don't know. I guess I have a really good Netflix experience.
Well, congratulations. mine's you know, passable at best.
My condolences.
Yeah, yeah, it's sad, so sad. On the plus side, you know, my bandwidth is very high, and so therefore it, you know, there's no interruption in the stream, which is good. There's no buffering, yeah, which, you know, you used to get in the bad old days. So that's really quite lovely. I just wish that they used a higher bit rate. I understand why they don't do it, and they, as a matter of fact, they recently lowered it. I believe they lowered it universally and not merely in Canada, but even Canada's landline broadband providers meter their internet access.
Right.
And so what they wound up, they realized obviously Netflix streaming was very, very popular, but they would use their allocation for the month within the first week.
Right.
And so what they wound up doing was they wound up lowering the bit rate on their program material. And I think they did it in the United States as well. And the quality has suffered. Mm. You know, it's just not as good, especially when you've got, you know, very dark things that you're watching, or subtle gradients and all that.
And I've noticed some stuff that's been on there for a while too, where it's like clearly encoded
poorly.
Earlier at least, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, I watch a lot of cartoons. Okay, I admit it. I watch a lot of cartoons on Netflix. Oh, that's what I do.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that the animation gets affected by the artifacting much more than live action, or at least I can probably ignore it in live action a little bit more.
Right. Well, you don't have you don't have a lot of solid black lines and so forth in live action. You know, that are just glaring. And a cartoon. Yeah.
And then, in cartoons as well,
you've got these
large swaths of you know, cell shading, which wind up getting over-compressed into a solid block.
It's like, that should be one color, not a color with some shading in it.
Yeah, just it winds up becoming a very, very bad experience. So I wind up, I'm still very much tied to the shiny discs.
I guess that's another thing too, is like I consume a little bit of everything. I buy a Blu-ray disc and I try to buy the combo so that I can shove them on my media server and have it if I want to, just, you know, if I'm laying in bed and want to watch something. But
well, I'm thinking about getting a Blu-ray. As a matter of fact, I almost pulled the trigger at buying a Blu-ray drive for my Mac Pro. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can't watch Blu-ray films on the Mac,
right,
because Apple has decided that you're not allowed to do that, which is fine, whatever. You know, I've got a larger television than I have a monitor, so I have no problem, you know, just loading the disc in. But if I want to rip Blu-ray, that's a nice, convenient way of doing it. I think it's OWC is having their holiday sale, and you know, you can get them now. You know, you can get a, you know, bottom of the barrel Blu-ray drive for like, I think for like $50 these days.
Yeah, for the ROM drive. Yeah, they're
just for the ROM. You know, and if you want to get like a good one, you'll spend $100. You could certainly spend more, but that's usually additional software and
right,
maybe
right,
some additional special cables or what have you. It's not a better mechanism per se.
Right. I have the Samsung ROM and I have the LG burner. Back when they had that combo one that also read HD DVD.
Oh yeah, I remember that. I had such high hopes for HD DVD. It just didn't pan out. So did Microsoft, apparently. You know, I just thought it was the next logical progression, but clearly Sony won that round.
Yeah.
I guess it's karma for losing out Beta. I liked Beta. It was a higher resolution, but clearly if you can't put a football game onto a tape, then you've got problems.
That's going to kill it, right?
Yep. So
then there's only one game in town, though, for ripping DVDs, right? MakeMV is the only thing I know of.
Yep. That's really the only thing that's available. Handbrake will rip to the drive, will rip to the hard drive, but the encoding has to be done with MakeMV. I think, or maybe I'm wrong. The newest versions of Handbrake certainly deal with Blu-ray.
Do you want to know what my solution was?
What was
Don't laugh, and please anyone listening, don't come at me with a pitchfork. So I took that I tried it once upon a time PC, HTPC, and put Windows 7 on it and got some Blu-ray ripping thing. And so I just have a PC that I only use to rip Blu-rays.
That's your rip station. Hey, yeah. You know, repurposing, why not?
Yeah.
You know,
put it works. Use. So.
Yeah, exactly. And it wouldn't work in another operating system, you know, because, you know, the Linux folks and the Mac folks simply don't have the right contracts enabled, you know, with the content providers to make that happen. It's deeply unfortunate. So, of course, the other way to get content onto your home theater PC or just your, you know, television watching experience, of course, is the nefarious BitTorrent. Which is interesting because there are sites out there that have RSS feeds for a particular show. So if you liked Battlestar Galactica, for example, when it was playing, you could subscribe to the Battlestar Galactica feed, and every week, you know, bam, a new show would just magically show up in your hard drive.
Yeah,
which
me, I'm the person that I'm the model for industry to look to. I only care about that stuff if you keep me from the content.
Like exactly.
When we lived in Australia, we would go through particular channels, let's say, to get, you know, to content we just couldn't get, you know, and then like, so if I'm able to pay a little bit for something, I will, and if it's easier, and I'll get it, and I'm happy. So, but yeah,
yeah, exactly. If something is available to me, legit, I will go for it. Because it clearly has value to me, so I want it. That is different from, I'm not really sure about this, let me sample it.
Right.
You know, that is different. Morally, I mean, obviously, you know, you're supposed to pay for things, and that's fine. But at the same time, I'm also reticent to commit to something that I may not be interested in, and the content providers go out of their way to make it very, very difficult for you to actually sample.
Right. It's like, well, you can pay for this on cable and have a look. It's like, you're still asking me to pay to look at this, you know, to get an idea, yeah.
Yeah, and there's
I understand that, yeah.
Yeah, there's no way. I mean, you know, for example, if you don't get HBO, but you happen to like or possibly are interested in a particular series that they have, now you've got to wait a year and a half or 2 years before they put out the series on disc.
That's ridiculous, and that's just pushing people to go to these other channels for it.
Exactly. It should be available digitally, you know, day and date. Maybe I'll give them a benefit of the doubt where, okay, I do happen to know that, especially with certain shows, those shows are in the can, you know, moments before they actually air.
Right.
Nowadays, you know, because they're always doing some minor tweak. It's never sitting there for 6 months and then, oh, they just decide to pop it on air. It is almost always, you know, down to the wire. So I understand if you're not going to go and have it available for streaming the following day, but make an effort. You know, I'll give you a week. You know, make everything delayed a week.
Even like, you know, a month or so is fine with me. If I know it's coming and, you know, if it's like, all right, I don't get, you know, Stars, so I wanted to watch the new Torchwood, you know, and I wasn't about to go get Stars just watch Torchwood, so I waited and waited. But if they'd have just, and it took forever, and I was so tempted to go get it, and I didn't, but you know, if I'd have known that, 4 weeks, I'll be able to get it on iTunes, that'd have been fine. But it was more like, I don't know, you know, 3, 4, 5 months. And it's like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Or, I mean, nowadays, the content providers are a little bit more savvy. They will put out entire series as, you know, all of the episodes. But for a while, they were producing discs that had most of the episodes. not
or
all
they
of
were
them.
Doing, yeah, or they were doing that thing with Hulu where they would put a show up, but they would, okay, well, all right, now we're going to take down season episode 1 and 2, and now 3 and 4 are up. And if you didn't catch on when 1 and 2 were up, meh.
I mean, it's the internet. You've got infinite. You basically have an infinite hard drive, an infinitely large hard drive. Yeah. Why on earth are you making it difficult for me to view the content that you've got? You know, and again, I'll pay.
Yeah,
I'm
and
willing
I'll give you
to
an
pay.
Example of someone who got it. It's like BBC America. They were not showing Doctor Who at the same time as the British release, or even close to it. And so people were getting it through BitTorrent or whatever, and they were complaining because, well, my friends watch this, you know, because this is a global, you know, village now, and all my friends are talking about what happened in the new Doctor Who that isn't even out here. So they came around, and now we get Doctor Who pretty much the same time, you know, because they listen. And I guarantee you that the torrenting of that show has dropped dramatically.
Sure. Yeah. Because availability. You know, you've got it. You can actually get it at a reasonable time, and it also is streamable fairly quickly as well. You know, it's usually faster than the actual shiny discs are available, which is really lovely.
Yeah, and it's a different world. It's not just impatience, too. Like I said, people were going, you know, shut up. I can't watch it yet. You know, don't talk about it.
And if something
I watched that 2 months ago, though.
Exactly. If something's half a year old, I'm sorry, but you've killed the spoiler. You know, feel free to spoil anything. It's your own fault for not getting it within 6 months, even if it, you know, wasn't actually technically, legally available to you. I understand the concepts of spoilers. I don't care, you know, because if something is intriguing to me, you can describe it in excruciating detail, and I will potentially be more interested than I was prior to the conversation. I don't mind having things spoiled because I like to get absorbed into what I'm watching, and I like to, you know, have it sort of wash over me and experience that firsthand. And it's different from having someone explain it to you. So I really don't mind spoilers.
Oh, and the one we didn't mention was Boxy, which is
we mentioned still, a little bit.
It's still around, is what I said.
It is. Well, it's got the Boxy box.
Yeah,
right?
I know. But I thought, I'm like, all right, that's got to be dead by now. But apparently it's still around. Yeah. And apparently today, I think it was, they announced... they have a new dongle coming out called a Live Stick, which lets you plug it into the Boxy box and you plug an antenna into it and you watch over the air HDTV on the Boxy box.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
The first one to do that, so I was a little impressed. But like I said, I didn't realize they were still making them.
Yeah. I mean, their interface still kind of sucks.
Who makes them? Netgear, D-Link, something like that?
D-Link, I believe. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a cute little shape, you know, that sort of sunken cube.
I thought it was going to go the way of the Google TV, which...
Well, I was going to say, considering, Boxy is doing fairly well, I like the Boxy folk. I think they have a really good product. I like their spirit. I like what they're doing. They weren't the best solution for me.
Yeah, no, me neither.
But yeah, no, and their hardware makes it, you know, certainly compete with Roku or Apple TV. I think they just need more marketing. And the same thing with Roku as well. You kind of hear Roku through other people, which is really great because everyone who has a Roku loves the Roku.
Right.
But you don't see them anywhere. The vast majority of people out there have no idea what a Roku is.
Right. But you know, that's one of the problems I think with the Boxy was the price when it came out. Same thing with the Google TV, which I understand that who was it, Netgear, have now said was a mistake for them to make. But the thing about the Roku is the now the cheapest one is $50.
Oh yeah.
I mean that's just that's like really hard to beat.
Yeah.
It's not it's like
a,
the
is it HD though? Well, I think the lowest of the low end is still SD.
It's HD but will only do 720p.
Okay. Well, you know, considering, I mean, that seems to be the state of the norm.
There are three of them, and I can't quite, and I think the middle one is HD, and then the top one is HD and also has the USB media input.
Oh, which, right. So you can plug in a disc or something.
Right.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, because if I recall correctly, there's not a lot of storage on that thing.
Well, the Roku?
The Roku, yeah.
Yeah, there's no real storage to speak
of. It's pretty much just a streaming channel box.
Right.
Versus, you know, a home theater PC with a library and all that.
Right, but if you want the higher end one, you can slap in, you know, a thumb drive or a hard drive or a SD card. So it's
very nice, very nice. But last time I went to the Roku homepage, they seemed to have like four or five different variants, and they all looked identical, and so I couldn't really understand immediately the difference between all of them. I mean, obviously they had different price points, but those price points were also pretty close together. They were all like, you know, $20 or $40 different or something.
Oh my God. I just went to their homepage to look, and guess what's on the front page? HBO Go.
Oh, very lovely.
That's a big deal.
That is a huge deal. So does that mean that there's going to be a software update that you'll be able to download and therefore suddenly have HBO Go on your television?
Well, it'll be a channel. So the way Roku is you, there's a channel store. You just go there and look for a channel and add the channel, and then it's there.
Oh, that's actually how Plex works as well. They have they call it a store or what have you. It's not a store. There's no, monetary transaction. But yeah, you just select what you want and you hit the go button and it just downloads and installs itself, which is pretty cool.
This is so good. I'm going to watch over the Thanksgiving. I think I'm going to watch Game of Thrones from my bedroom.
Excellent. I highly suggest it. And now what's interesting is that, you know, the film got me interested to actually read the books as well. I hear that the books are, you know, again, very, very dense, which is why I haven't, you know, tried dealing with them.
Sorry, I was one more thing. Yeah, so it looks like there is the $50 box now is a thing called the LT, which may not be HD. So the one that was the 59, well, it's 59. It was the lowest end. It's HD, but so there's a $50 box, a $49 box, and a $59 box.
Yeah, why would you do that? Why not just freaking?
You know,
I imagine the HD one.
I guarantee you, its price point. No, wait, no, it says play 720p. So I take that back.
Yeah, but again, why? I mean, it's $10.
You know how people are, though, man. That's why do we still do $49.99? Because people think less than $50.
Yeah, I just don't. Ugh. I mean, to me, there's no difference between $49.95 and $59.95. Mm. You know, it just seems like a logical, jump. You know, if I'm already shelling out $50, I can shell out another $10. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not. I'm already spending $6,000. I will spend another $5,000 on top of that. That's a different story.
But I guarantee their idea is they'll sell these in Radio Shacks and Best Buys, and they'll be up there, you know, showing off it's under $50. I mean, it doesn't have the memory slot, doesn't do 1080p, but...
Exactly.
And doesn't do Angry Birds.
Oh, see, therein lies the game. That's the problem. If it doesn't do Angry Birds, then it doesn't exist. It's like Emacs, you know. It's got to do everything. It's got to do everything.
I think the industry, including cable, will catch up. I don't think cable will actually necessarily catch up. I think they will be pushed to the brink. I think, like we were talking earlier, I think things like HBO Go are a portent of things to come where the demand will push for, you know, a la carte services, and whether or not the cable companies are still involved is up to them. But, you know, the money's there on the table for them to take.
Well, I think ultimately, when everyone's contract is up, when HBO's contract is up, when Fox's contract is up, when NBC's contracts are up and all that, Viacom's contracts are up, I can certainly see the execs at all these networks saying, you know, we can just make iOS apps and create our own apps and have people give us money directly.
Right.
You know, why, you know, yes, having millions of people, you know, on cable television, that's great because people will, you know, people are still going to watch cable television like they do today in 3 years and 5 years, what have you. That's not really going to go away. But I think there will be an alternate where these new contracts will allow these networks to create these apps and stream not only in your home. For example, the Cablevision app, my cable provider has an iOS app for iPad and for iPhone.
Right. Comcast does too.
Yeah, and they're really quite good. The one for Cablevision actually allows you to stream live television on the app, which is amazing. And it's right. it's got most of the channels. I mean, they wanted to have all of the channels available, all the actual video channels available. I don't know if they're there yet. I haven't used it very often, but there's a big caveat to that, and that caveat is you must be in your own home in order to watch the streaming video.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because it's, again, it's the contractual obligation that they have to the networks.
How do they... Oh, so you have to be on their... Well, how do they know?
Yeah, so the way it works is, yeah, you have to be on the Cablevision network. You have to be on... Oh. So you have to get... You have to get cable internet access via cable provider, via Cablevision. And... it effectively acts as a third, as an alternate television screen, and that's how they got around it. There were a few legal battles that were going on, and I'm not a lawyer, and I didn't follow them too closely. But the way they were able to win the case, the way Cablevision was able to win the case, was to say that, well, it's not streaming over the internet; it's streaming over our network, which is different. Which is also interesting because if you log into the Cablevision app when you are at a friend's house, it knows that your login is tied to your particular MAC address for the cable modem.
Duh.
Right. So you won't be able to log in, or rather you could, but you'd have to log in using your friend's credentials.
Ugh.
Which is a little weird. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Cablevision, I mean the Comcast Xfinity app, it doesn't do the live streaming, but it does like all the on-demand stuff, but it does it anywhere, which is, I think I'd just prefer that, because I've never watched things when they're on anyway, so.
Right, wow, see, I'm exactly the opposite.
Really?
I have to. Well, I have to. I don't have a TiVo or anything. Oh, I don't have a DVR.
No. My entire life is time-shifted.
Yeah, my entire life is time shifted as well, but it's the West Coast feed. So I'll watch Colbert at 1 o'clock in the morning, rather than 11 o'clock, so or 11:30 or so.
No, oh God, can you want me to send you my TiVo?
It's so sad. It really is. Oh,
well, please, I'm going to have a spare here anytime now.
Oh, that is true. That is true. But I think, doesn't that require getting a cable card and all of that sort of thing? Right. Yeah. I don't know. That's just a pain in the ass.
I've got an old Series 2 if you want that, but it won't do high def.
Yes, you know. Everything for me, it's either high def or nothing. I don't want standard definition, which is hilarious because... most channels on Cablevision, if you've got an HD tuner, cable box, are in HD. There are a couple that are still on SD, and they are so bad. I mean, not only are they overcompressed, but of course you're blowing them up onto a screen that was much, much larger than, your typical 27 or 30 inch, old school 4:3 CRT.
Right. I would rather there's a few of them that just own up to it and they'll just broadcast with in 4:3 with bars.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you might as well do that. Don't try to fool me because it's going to look like crap. It's already going to kind of look like crap on my big TV, but at least don't try to make it even worse.
Yeah. The window boxing is horrible. It's like you're taking away additional resolution. Just stop. Or, why... And these are mainstream channels, like, for example, Lifetime. Lifetime on Cablevision is not in high definition, but it exists in high definition elsewhere.
Oh, well, yeah, BBC America on my Comcast is not in high definition. Although, in their defense, it's wide and it's gotten better. It looks like somehow they've reduced. It used to be really, really bad.
The compression artifacts, you mean?
Yeah, they've at least relaxed that somewhat. But yeah, it's not the BBC America HD, which exists.
Yeah, but you just don't. Your cable company just doesn't carry it,
right?
Yeah,
and it's funny because they do carry it in other markets. So,
oh, that is strange. And again, I think it's all contract stuff.
Yeah,
you know, it's this market for this particular period of time or what have you. Ugh.
No, it's ridiculous. Also, right now I have a cold. I don't know if people will notice that I have a cold, and as you've chastised me for, I was also drinking I guess it's not really dairy. I was drinking what I call a hippie white Christmas, which is Kahlua and vodka and soy eggnog.
The whole concept of soy eggnog offends me. It's
ordinarily I don't even drink like hard liquors, but I wanted a beer and I didn't have any, so that was what I had.
Oh, I always have beer in the fridge.
So my head is kind of boop.
Well, actually, one of the nice things about the commute is on the Metro North line of the commuter rail, the one that goes into Connecticut. The other two lines stick in New York. They have bar cars inside the trains.
Nice.
Which is fantastic. It's very civilized, very lovely.
It's very civilized.
They also have, recently, there is a sort of a beer market in Brooklyn called Beer Table, and they have an outlet in Grand Central right near where my train is. So if I have enough time, what I will do is I will hop in there, peruse what they've got, because what they have is always changing. They've got a growler robot, which is lovely. So if you wanted to get a growler of something, you have that as an opportunity as well, which is very, very lovely. And you just pop onto the train. Ironically, they are not allowed to open the bottle for you, but they will sell you a bottle opener for a dollar. And I'm like, really? It's got to be some sort of lock. But that's interesting because the other kiosks that are there, the carts that serve alcohol, they open up the liquor, like, you know, the little mini liquors and all that. If you're going to, you know, get a rum and tonic or something, they open those up for you and they mix your drink for you. They'll open up the wine, they'll open up the beer, but they're all twist tops. So I'm wondering if it's like a weird law where you can't have a non-twist beer bottle opened.
Some union probably negotiated for that back in the 40s.
Entirely possible. Entirely possible. Or maybe it was just not seen as something, I don't know, gentlemanly or something. Who knows when these laws were created, right? So,
yeah.
You know, and of course they're kind of not harming anyone, so they never get repealed. And so consequently, they just stay there ad infinitum. It's pretty awful.
Next time you're here, too, that reminds me, we need to go to the Queen's Head. Harpoon makes a ale just for the Queen's Head pub at Harvard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's called the Harvard 1636 Ale, and they only make it for that pub.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, we should do that.
Very much so. Very much so. We've got a date. So, let's see. Oh, we're officially on iTunes now. So, that's pretty cool.
Yay!
So, you can look for us in iTunes. That's really fantastic. So, again, download us, rate us, send nice notes to us.
Send money.
Send money, please. subscribe via RSS. Yeah, so we'll keep making these. And let's see, where can we find you?
Well, you know, I've tried to tighten this up. So I'm just going to say you can find me at about.me/MaggieMcPhee or MaggieMcPhee.com. But I do want to also plug my webcomic, which is SakuraiMoo.com. If you don't know how to spell that, we'll put it in the show notes. Where can we find you, sir?
You can find me on the Twitter as at Octothorpe, OctoThorpe. And you can also find my personal blog at localtype.org. I should probably pay more attention to that blog.
No, I totally understand.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I usually only write in long form, and I just haven't had the time. I've just been so busy with work and doing other side projects that I've got a lot of articles that are in the queue, but none are actually finished. So maybe I'll do that this weekend. And
that'd be a plan. Yeah. Oh, you can also find me on Twitter at TANKGRRL. And you can find the show at RI4E, which is
RI and the numeral 4E. Right. So great. So that ends another show, and we will see you next week. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Music for Ruining It for Everyone provided by Kevin MacLeod.
Beautiful.
Monkey butt.